Joining me now on the HeStar Automotive Group Hotline is Debbie Yao, former athletic director at NC State, of course, but she was actually the first woman to be an AD in the ACC when she was at Maryland first in 94. Even before that, at St. Louis, she was a coach, she was a basketball player. In short, if anyone knows a lot about Title IX, it's Debbie Yao. Debbie, I appreciate you taking some time for me today, and it's 50 years since Title IX was passed and made law in this country, and I believe you have a unique perspective on it. And where would you like to start here? You want to go back to your playing days or your coaching days, or you want to start most recent? I'll give you the dealer's choice here.
It'll probably be in the beginning.
All right.
Probably around 1971.
All right, let's start there. You're playing basketball at Elon. Your sister Kay was your coach, correct?
Yes, she was.
All right. Basketball is your family, was your life for sure. Tell me a little bit about back then when this legislation was passed. I'm sure people didn't realize the impact it was going to have. I'm sure there was many fears and concerns.
Lots of fears and concerns by the guys. You know, it really had initially, in terms of what you were thinking about in Title IX terms, it was really about women having the opportunity to pursue their dreams in professional careers, like becoming an attorney, becoming a medical doctor. And those opportunities were limited by the fact that women with better scores and grades were being passed over for admittance to men. And the theory was, and what was thought at that time, although 50 years later it sounds pretty odd, that the men needed to gain entrance into those professional fields because they had families to feed. That's what was said.
I'm sure there were doubts, too, about could a woman be a lawyer? Could she be a doctor, right? It's crazy to think about
question.
In the prism of 2022.
It is. It really is. And so athletics was really not what it was all about. And then, of course, it applied. There was an attempt at one time to set aside athletics or any endeavor like athletics in an educational institution that did not receive direct federal funds. But, of course, we have lots of federal funds coming to public universities and even to private institutions in a lesser degree for things like the Pell Grant. So, gratefully, that attempt failed. And so we were off and running in the mid-70s, really beginning to see it change. And that's when Kentucky hired me in the summer of 1976 to become their first full-time women's basketball coach. And, of course, I was thrilled. I was making $9,000. And I had been teaching English at Eastern Guilford High School in North Carolina for 11. So I had to refinance my car because I was going to be making less. But all I could think of, Joe, was they're going to pay me to coach women's basketball.
Wait a second.
This is fabulous.
Wait a second. You were making more as a teacher in high school in North Carolina than you were as the head coach of Kentucky's women's basketball team.
You have to go back 50 years.
Okay.
Again, there were no such things as no such positions as full-time women's basketball coaches.
Kentucky, did Kay get one of the first at NC State?
No, Kay was not a full-time basketball coach. She coached basketball, softball, volleyball.
Oh, wow.
She had lots of duties. When Kentucky hired me, they said, basketball, this is it for you. You know, take care of your program, do what you need to do, but that's what we want you to do. So I was thrilled just to be able to be on the court with the team and coach. It was a dream come true. And I didn't really – I remember I lived in a one-bedroom efficiency – I was in a little efficiency-type apartment, and I remember the window in my bedroom was just barely above ground level. That's what I really remember about it, because I remember looking at it and thinking, wow, it'd be pretty easy to break into my apartment while I'm gone with the team or whatever, because there it is. The window's right there on the ground level. But I had a good financial deal for the apartment, so of course I took it.
Yeah. Now, that first year at Kentucky, were you thinking, this is going to work, this is going to turn into ultimately what it did, or what were the struggles like for you?
Well, we were in campus recreation for the first 2 years. In the third year, the Athletic Association, and they were already separately incorporated at that time, they took us in. They made a huge switch. And so we went.
Wait, you weren't even part of the athletic department? You were like intramurals?
No. We were varsity.
Okay.
But we lived in the building with campus recreation, because the women's athletic director at that time, Sue Themster, reported to the head of campus recreation. So it was varsity, mm-hmm. so to speak. It was varsity, and we were playing other varsity teams, but we were separate. And then in 2 years later, they added us, folded us into the athletic program, moved us over to Memorial Coliseum, and Coach Hall, Joe B. Hall, who was very good to me, Coach Hall got new offices in the same building in Memorial, and I took over his offices. So it was almost surreal to walk in that day and realize I was going from the Seton Hall campus rec building, little tiny space there, into Coach Hall's offices. It was good. That part was good.
Yeah, Debbie Yao joining me here on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. We're talking about Title IX and the 50th anniversary and some of her experiences with it. Now, at that time, how many scholarships did Kentucky women's basketball have?
Kentucky in 1976 offered the full number of scholarships that the NCAA would allow. The team had not been particularly successful recently. They were okay.
Yeah.
They were okay. But there we're starting a top 20 in the nation. And of course, my goal, Joe,
of
you
course.
Know me.
Yes.
My goal is, I don't know how we get there from being, I think we were 13 and 12 the year before I got there, how we get there, but we need to try to figure this out. And so we did. And after our fifth game, we upset the number two team in the nation, Tennessee Tech, by 1 point, 72-71. And Tennessee Tech used to be a powerhouse in women's yeah. basketball. So they were on their way to play at Madison Square Garden and had stopped off at UK for kind of a warm-up game. So we were pretty determined. And we won that game, and the next week we went into the top 20. And I could talk forever about all that, Joe, because I loved it.
Yeah.
I still love it. I still love watching Wes Moore do his thing. And when I was at Maryland, I loved watching Brenda Freeze be successful.
I was going to say, just a quick side note here on the state of the women's game right now. The NCAA finally kind of embracing it, if you will, giving them the March Madness
yeah.
Logo. But I feel like yeah. they've given them a little bit better treatment. But just your thoughts on where you were there when you were literally there when it started and,
yeah.
and where the game is now. That has to be part of the positive effects of this that you see.
It is. They really do need to have this opportunity to at least consider bundling the women's sports that are on TV, like women's basketball, women's softball, volleyball, gymnastics, to see what the true value is.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what the true value is. Depending on who you ask, they'll say, you know, it's not very much. That's why it's bundled with the men. And I think that originally that might have been the case, but we're way past that now, in terms of audiences and people's across
social
the board,
media platforms. Yeah, just look.
Yeah, interest. I remember a media person said to me around 1980, something like that. I mean, and he was a nice guy, by the way. He said to me, Debbie, I know you and your family love women's basketball, but you just have to admit, no one's ever going to care.
Mm.
They're just never going to watch this. So I just disagree.
Yeah.
And he's long since passed, so I can't have that conversation with him now. But it's obviously so much better, Joe, than it ever has been, which is good for women. These opportunities are very important.
Debbie Yao, former NC State AD, former Maryland AD, joining me here on the OG. Joe Ovius is out today. I'm Joe Giglio. You mentioned when Title IX was originally passed, it really was about other professional pursuits. A lawyer, a doctor, I'm sure, an accountant, you name it. However, I'm curious, back in 1971, you're at Elon, your sister Kay is the coach. Obviously, your family had, and your dad played such an instrumental role in your sister Susan, a legend, all of your pursuits in sports. I'm curious, even being so forward thinking as you were, could you ever have imagined that you would become an athletic director in the ACC and at the school, NC State, that you loved?
No, I could not have, because there was no such creature that existed. So I had no one to look to until I remember, getting hired at St. Louis, mm-hmm. which was so unlikely that a Midwestern Catholic university would hire a Southern female in a non-traditional role.
Right.
And I was a late entry into, I was nominated, and I didn't even know if it was worth going for the interview, because it seemed so unlikely that I would be hired. I'm so grateful to Father Biondi, who, Jesuit priest who was president, who did hire me. And then 2 years later, I was able to make a change in men's basketball, which I felt like was the right thing, and hired a man named Charlie Spoonhour, who became the ESPN National Coach of the Year in his second year. So, and then that led to Maryland, and then 16 years at Maryland, and then home to NC State, which was also surreal on the day it happened because of, as you pointed out, the history of my family with the university. And Susan was able to attend. She was living, I think, in Charlotte at the time, and I was really, glad to see her. Kay had passed the year before,
yeah.
So and my mom and dad, of course, had passed, so they weren't there, but it was great to see Susan there.
This is a rightful celebration, 50th anniversary of Title IX, but I wonder, you're known for your honesty and your bluntness. If you could get Nina King or Heather Lyk or Carla Williams, I'm sure you know all three. But if you could give them, in a moment of honesty or bluntness, like, guys, you have no idea the crap that I had to put up with back when I first got into the league. Like, could you have one of those conversations with them? Or do they kind of understand the path that you blazed and that they're there because you went before them?
I think that I know Heather and Carla pretty well. I don't know Nina.
Mm-hmm.
I did write her a note when she was named AD, but in terms of, personally knowing her, I don't know her. But Heather and Carla I do know, and they're very respectful. And I remember my last year at State, we were at a winter meeting of the ACC, and on break, Heather said to me, "What are we going to do when you're gone?" And I said, "You're going to lead.
Yeah.
Well, speak up. You're smart. So is Carla. You're so well prepared for this. And I'm so glad the atmosphere is better. It's better. Is it exactly the same? No, it's not exactly the same, but so what? Let's go." And so she's really talented. And when she won the football championship of the ACC this
yeah.
year, I wrote her, I sent her a text and said, this is congratulations. And Carl's doing well at Virginia. So do they know? You can't really know what it was like 50 years ago or what it was like 30 years ago as an AD, but they have an idea.
Yeah.
They know they're glad this is now and they're in it now. Although I could make the case that being in it now with NIL, transfer eligibility and immediately being able to play in COVID might not be the ideal time to be in.
Different challenges for sure.
Yes. Debbie,
yeah, I appreciate you so much for taking some time with me today, and I'm sure we will talk again soon.
My pleasure. Go Pack.